Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, August 10th, 2014. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. You can rate and review the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Tell everybody why you like it. You can email the podcast at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Mundane Festival. You can follow me, your host, Chris Lamberth, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. And you can like it on Facebook if you're into that sort of thing. So there's a lot of ways you can get in contact with the podcast. You can know what's happening at any moment, at any time, what I'm doing, what I ate on Twitter. I don't really do that unless I go to some swanky restaurant or something. Last night I went to the Giants preseason game. I got the hookup on the tickets. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have gone. But I was like, of course I will. Meadowlands is 15 minutes from my place. So I went with a lady friend last night. And it was a good time. It was fun. But just when going to these, when I went to games as a kid, and it's more like, there's more like when you're not, I always use the line, when you're not that abused by time, you look at a stadium, you look how it's massive, it's big, you see these amazing athletes playing a game. And now, as somebody who's 34 years old, all I see are like dollar signs and price tags as like how much all this shit costs. Fortunately, we had tickets. We didn't have to worry about the tickets. We had a parking pass. A parking pass is like $30. Tickets are $120 a piece. So you're looking at almost $300 tickets and all, whatever. Anyway, all right. So I got the hookup. Was happy to get it. Went with a lady friend, and you just see these price tags, and then not only that, the security at NFL games, because let's put it this way. The last time I went to an NFL game was, I want to say it was either 2008 or 2009, whenever Terrell Owens was playing with the Bills, because the Jets were playing the Bills at the old stadium. And that was the last time I went. And I remember the tailgating being more fun than the actual game. The tailgating was fun. We were drinking. No, I didn't drink that much, Mom. We were eating great food. And then we get into the game, and it was really cold. Everybody at the game, this was around October, I want to say, and everybody at the game, when you're in these seats, and every time a play happens, people stand up, and you have to stand up because everybody else is standing up because you can't see over them. And it was just ridiculous. And it was just like, it was kind of a pain. Usually, for the most part, my friend and I were talking, and we both agreed that football is a game that can be better, is best enjoyed watching it on television. Now, if I had a kid, I would want to take him to the game, especially if he wanted to go. That's what my dad did. You know, I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but, so we go to the game, and we park, and we're walking over. And, I remember when my friend got picked her up, and, she gets in the car, and one of the first things she says to me is like, yeah, I had to switch out my mom purse, my huge purse, with this small one, cause I know they won't let me into the game with a big mom purse. And I was like, cool. You're very smart and thoughtful, and you know what the deal is. You're ready for this game. So we get there, We're walking over, having a good time walking over. And we get to, like, before you get to the actual gate, there's another gate before that where they're checking bags. And if you're, they have a table and they have a rectangle on that table that's painted, and you have to put your bag over that rectangle to see if you make the cut, if your bag makes the cut to get inside. So it's basically like if you were going on an amusement park ride, it would be like, you know, you must be this tall to ride the ride, except for women's purses. So your purse must be this big for you to get into the game. And she didn't make the cut. And her purse was small. It was like the size of a small Bible, like a pamphlet thingy. So she didn't make the cut. She was pissed. And she was about to talk some shit. And I was like, hey, let's, she had to take like a 3-minute breather before we decided what we were going to do. Cause they were going to let you check your bag. And like you get a ticket, like at a coat check. I wasn't too cool with that. And she wasn't either, but I was like, nah, you don't need to do that. We'll just go back to the car. And then they give you this. So we did, but they give you this plastic bag. It's like to put your shit in there. So it's like you know, strippers have clear shoes. It was like a carry-on bag. It was like an accessory for a stripper, except it was just this bag, and it's a little demeaning in a way. So it's like, this is the stuff. This is my stuff. But I don't know. It was just kind of weird. She was mad about that. The NFL, I think this went in act when they put this in play over a year ago. I didn't know about that. Hadn't been to any football stadium in 5 years or so. She was really pissed about that. And she was starting to get a little mouthy, not towards me, but she was about, I was like, look, you got to calm down because, they probably won't bother you, but they might choke me for being with you. And they choke out black dudes now. So that's like a new trend. Like that's like a new trend, like skinny jeans, but for cops and security people, their skinny jeans are, choking black dudes. I don't know do people still wear skinny jeans now? I don't know. I'm not hip. So we go back, and before I picked her up, I bought us water to take to the game. And I was thinking to myself, yeah, they're not going to let us, drink water. And I paid $4 for 2 bottle waters at Dunkin' Donuts. That's already kind of pricey. So we left them in the car. But then when we went back, she's like, I'm getting my water. I was like, you know, they're going to make us throw these waters out. And we had our water with us. We got past the first security checkpoint. Then they checked our bags. And they checked our pockets and stuff. They gave us the beeper test thingy. And she said, and they made us throw out our water. And she says, it's like, this is ridiculous. And the security guy kind of got pissed. He was looking at her like, what? And I was like, just calm down. Let's just get into the game. I like fight. When women get feisty, that's pretty, I like that. But anyway, we get into the game and we walk to the, we're going to our escalator. We get up there and we're hungry and we get food. Now she gets a hot dog, and of course the water's $5. We're going up the escalator. I forgot to tell you this part. I'm talking about dads. I'm going to talk about dads and son, fathers and sons. So we're walking up. I'm complaining to her about the water. They made us throw out the water. And there's a guy in front of us with his son, and he hears us talking. He's like, yeah, it's ridiculous. And, you know, they make you do all these things just to get in the game. And then the players who beat the shit out of their girlfriends and wives get to like just get 2-game suspensions, but you're really strict on fans that come to the game. Fans are crazy. There was a dude that was walking around. There's a guy that was walking around in a Steelers outfit, and he had a bandana over his face. So he looked like this crazy dude that looked like a Crip, or he looked like a gangbanger, but he had Steelers shit on. I know Crips wear blue, but he just looked like an LA thug. He looked like a thug, and I peed in my pants a little bit. I'm not gonna lie, a little bit came out. Not a lot, but just a little bit. And I was like, wow, this is just a preseason game. You realize that this, like, Ben Roethlisberger is only going to take 3 snaps. This is fucking ridiculous. This is really, like, you're doing too much. It's like the time where I was at Sonic and I was getting food. Obviously, that's what you do when you're fat and you go to Sonic. But like this guy, I appreciated about this kid. He was a young kid, he was a black kid. He had his uniform on and he had his headphones on and he was walking around like Ray Lewis, just getting really hyped to go flip burgers. And I appreciated that about him. It was a young man with work ethic. So I don't know why I told you that story, but he was getting hyped. And it's like, dude, you're just at Sonic. Why are you getting like amped over this? But I appreciated that. But I did not appreciate this guy looking at the game last night, looking like a thug, because it freaked me out. Just for a little bit, a little pee. So we're going up the escalator talking. And the guy's like, yeah, it's expensive. Water's like $5. And it's crazy. And it's like, yeah, these tickets are, this is a preseason game and the tickets are super expensive. And he was like, and I was like, you know what though? I said, your son's going to remember this. Like, he's going to remember like you taking him to this game. And, he was like, yeah, well, he better. I had to mortgage the house just to get these tickets. He's like, you better enjoy this. He was making a joke out of it and it was cool. One thing though, the food, I mean, you expect the food and the drinks to be super expensive. Water's $5. The hot dog, I don't know how much the hot dog was, but she got a hot dog. We got a Papa John's pizza that was like $10. But the best thing on that menu that we got, that I tasted, were the chicken tenders and fries. I felt like I was in junior high. These chicken tenders were fucking amazing. There was no ranch dressing. They tasted great by themselves. And it was fucking great. That was really good. We made it, because we had to go back, we made it to our seats right before the national anthem. And the game was cool. We got to see Eli for a little bit. There was a fan. Like, Eli threw a shitty pass. And this one guy was like, Eli's trash. And I'm thinking, it's like, Eli Manning won 2 Super Bowls. Granted, if you say he's the best or one of the best quarterbacks, he's elite or not elite, the guy led a team to 2 Super Bowls. He's not trash. He did so much for your city. 2007, they hadn't won since the 90s. They hadn't won the Super Bowl since the 90s. And this guy brought you 2 Super Bowls within the last 10 years. You gotta give him props. Fans are so stupid. But overall, we had a good time. But I just think you kind of go through that whole experience. Wasn't that bad? I mean, we left around the fourth quarter, but that experience, like the traffic, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't really. It really wasn't bad at all. When we were driving home, there were fireworks. It was nice. We were driving on Route 3. It was nice. It was a nice night. It was the good time. So, without further ado, this is episode 79. I have a special guest, a man by the name of Michael Felder from the Bleacher Report. He's not only is he a guest, I'd say he's now a friend. I'd say he's a friend now. Mike, I mean, you could beg to differ, but that's how I feel. I felt like we became buddies. We became buddies and friends. He's with me on the podcast this week. But as always, I like to say this is episode 79 of the Mundane Festival. No, Chris, Jesus Christ. This is episode 79 of the Mundane Festival podcast. We're going to call this episode Rosie Brown. Let's get into it. Roosevelt Rosie Brown was born on October 20th, 1932 in Charlottesville, Virginia. Went to Morgan State University. Morgan State, young. 1953, drafted in 1953. Round 27, pick number 321. Debuted in 1953 and last played in 1965, all with the New York Giants. Career highlights and awards. 9-time Pro Bowl selection. 6-time first team All-Pro. NFL 75th anniversary all-time team. NFL 1950s all-decade team. 1956 NFL champion. Virginia Hall of Fame sports guy in 1979. He was also inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1979. Career NFL statistics, played 163 games, 4 fumble recoveries, and 32 kick return yards. And this is interesting about him. I'm just going to read you a bit from his wiki bio. Brown was drafted by the Giants out of Morgan State University in the 1953 NFL draft after being noticed by the Giants in the Pittsburgh Courier, an African-American newspaper that named him to their 1952 All-Black, All-American team. On the offensive line, Brown pass blocked for quarterbacks Charlie Connerly and Y.A. Tittle, and run blocked for backs like Alex Webster and Frank Gifford. Despite his 6'3", 255-pound frame, Brown was very quick on his feet, which was very unusual for his era. He is considered one of the greatest sleeper picks in NFL history, as he was drafted in the 27th round of the NFL draft. We talked about the Pro Football Hall, Pro Bowl, all that good stuff. He passed away on June 9th, 2004 at 71 years old, and he was ranked in 1999, ranked number 57 on the Sporting News' list of the 100 greatest football players. Before we get to Felder, I want to say, I saw two movies this week. I saw Guardians of the Galaxy. I'll talk about that maybe on episode 80, but I saw the James Brown biopic Get On Up. Now I want to say this. Recently, this has just come to my attention, and maybe it has to yours, but I feel like black biopics, musicians in general, biopics for the musicians, they're starting to become scrutinized like comic book movies. The way nerds feel there some kind of way about these comic book movies, black people are starting to feel this way about biopics of black heroes, black musicians, black entertainers. If you follow Mike Lawrence, who was a guest of the show on Twitter and Facebook, he's really into it. And we talked a little bit about black movies when he did the podcast a couple months ago. But you just have, like, you're starting to see, like, they're casting. There was all this drama with the Aaliyah biopic about who they cast and why they cast this person. And it's a Lifetime movie, the Whitney Houston movie. The Yaya DaCosta, I think that's her name. She plays Whitney. She's playing Whitney Houston, and she looks just like she really looks like her. The dude that played Bobby Brown, I don't know what the fuck, but people get upset about this. And there's a Twitter hashtag going on about like Lifetime. I think it's hashtag Lifetime movie casting or something. And they're just like, like white people, like they're casting white people to play like Missy Elliott, like Roseanne to play Missy Elliott, people that don't look anything. Like somebody even said like Bill Burr as Timbaland or something like that. Just like going like off the wall with their casting. And people were really into this man for these Lifetime movies. And it's getting crazy because like with the James Brown movie, like right before I saw it, I saw nothing but people saying like Huffington Post had an article that said the whitewashing of James Brown. And they're just no black writers on the movie. That's kind of shitty. That is shitty. No black writers on the film. And it's produced by the people that brought us The Help. And I don't know if I've been on record. I used to have a bit about it, but I don't think I had the podcast while that movie was out. But it was just like, it's like, that's really not going to get black people excited about this movie. And I think black people are critical of these movies because we collectively, now I don't want to say like we're not a monolith and all that shit, but black people collectively look at these figures like superheroes, the way nerds look at these like Superman or Spider-Man. These people were our heroes because not only did they have to deal with the racist bullshit and not only did they have to deal with like trying to make it in whatever industry that they were in, but they also had to deal with being black and what that meant in the time period that they were living in. And so, you know, we're not a monolith, but we look at guys like a Joe Louis as, you know, back in the day, like he was a hero. And if he could win, maybe we could win too. So it was something that I think there's something that's just goes part and parcel with I guess like black achievement or just like just the struggle, because you may not know like I used to, like when I was a kid, like I would travel, we'd be driving to North Carolina with my parents, and like we'd go to a KFC. I'm sorry, Black Twitter. There were no Popeyes in the general area on our route to North Carolina. So I'm sorry. And I didn't know at the time. Okay. So don't judge me, but we would go into a KFC and my dad would just start talking to some, like another black dude. And it was just like, I was like, Dad, do you know him? He was like, no, we were just talking. But that's the kind of guy that my dad is. He would talk to people. But then like another black guy, like if you see another black guy and you're just around and you just give him that nod, like, you know, that guy, you have an idea of what that guy's life is like, him being a black dude. So you just kind of have this admiration for these figures. I mean, I think I might have talked about this on the show before, but when I was a kid, you know, in elementary school, you would have, along with, you have your presidents on the wall, these like cartoon caricatures of presidents. And at the same time, I was in a predominantly black Catholic school. And we would have pictures of Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Madam C.J. Walker, George Washington Carver, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Benjamin Banneker. Those people were fucking cool. They were heroes. Like, they did real shit. So when you see, like, oh, there's going to be a James Brown biopic, you want that shit to be dope, man. Like, you really want to see what these guys went through. So I get why people, I mean, of course, I mean, you can't compare what Madam C.J. Walker went through to what Aaliyah went through. That's kind of like, I mean, that it doesn't make sense, but then it does. So when you, and a lot of people were are still pissed about Zoe Saldana in this Nina Simone biopic. Because Nina Simone meant so much to people. Like Kanye, he's not the first person, but that Blood on the Leaves, like, I mean, Jesus Christ. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's, people feel some kind of way. They feel this passion about these movies, and when they don't deliver, it becomes, it makes people angry. Like Fonte said a couple weeks ago on Twitter, you know, there needs to be a moratorium on these black biopics because they're not showing the realness. Like, they're not, it's not raw. They're not showing, like, are they going to show the drugs? Are they going to show the hoes? I mean, there's a great, Fonte, speaking of him, has got a great song called Who Loves You More. And he said, you know, there's a line, I'm going to paraphrase it, but he says, with every Martin and Basquiat, there comes a caveat, where it's like the fucked up lives, the kids that you don't talk to. It's just like that, though, that imagery and those lines that he, and that imagery and those lines are what we want to see in these movies. And when you don't see it, it's just like, this is some bullshit. So despite all that, I went to go, see Get On Up, and, I would give it a B minus, slash C plus. And, the only thing that saved this film for me was Chadwick Boseman, because he was terrific. I mean, he had the voice down. He started to look more and more like James Brown as he got older and as they added the prosthetics. But it was your standard issue, sharecropper, backwoods, southern upbringing with parents that were with shitty parents. And he rises to fame in spite of it. A little bit of drugs, a little bit of the abuse on the women, but mainly it focused on the performances. And it was just sort of like a fractured storytelling, kind of like Pulp Fiction, but with a black icon. And there were scenes like, I joked about this on social media. I said, what did I say? I'm going to find this for you. Cause it was just, it was sort of, what do we got here? Oh boy. Scrolling through my Facebook timeline here. I said, some of the writers from Get On Up must have worked on Saved by the Bell, because Jackie Robinson talked to the camera like Zach Morris. So I said, you know, black people, you know, we'll call an actor his character name, cause that was the first thing that blew him up or whatever. I just called it just to kind of have a little fun with it. But James Brown was like talking to the screen, like he was addressing the audience, talking to the camera. And it was like, is he like Zach Morris right now? He's like a Zach Morris with like, but just way extremely cooler. And cause they were trying to show how his musical ability was almost like a superpower. Cause he would hear, there's a scene where the band's rehearsing and he could hear things. He said like everything was a drum, like the horns, everything was a drum, and he wanted it to be a certain way. So there were cool scenes like it, like a B minus C plus. It's not a bad movie. It's just kind of like, it didn't have everything that it needed, you know, like it just didn't pack that full punch. Like, I don't know. I felt like a recent biopic, like Walk the Line, like that was good. I mean, that had the drugs, that had him trying to kick, like Walk the Line and Ray. I thought those were two really good biopics. La Bamba, I need to see again. I need to buy that again. That's like a movie that I would always watch as a kid whenever it was on TV. And even though, you're going to laugh at me, but even though it's not a real character, DJ and Hustle and Flow, like that's a good story. Like that's a story that's real. And I think Roger Ebert said it, that it was sort of like this. It was like Rocky. It really is, to me. I think it's a hood version of waiting for Guffman. Because if you look at the character of Skinny Black, Ludacris's character, he's Guffman. And you know, all of DJ's hopes are tied into Skinny Black, and every character's hopes in Guffman is tied into Guffman. But that movie had grit to it. It had a lot of grit around it, and it was dirty. It was, but it, you know, it's like beautiful, you know, in a way, like it's just, you know what I'm saying. And it, it had passion. And you and Get On Up, I mean, it had those elements, but it was just like James Brown. You could clearly see that James Brown was doing this for James Brown, because he always had to look out for himself, because his family part of his life was shitty. And there were good scenes, and it was good acting. I mean, anytime you got Viola Davis in a fucking scene, you know it's going to be dope. Chadwick Boseman's a good actor. He was surrounded by, you know, solid actors. So if you just want to see it for the performance, I would say go see it. But just think about that when you see people on the internet getting upset about these movies, you wonder why. I would say think about it as like if nerds were getting upset about these movies. But overall, solid. But yeah. All right. So we're going to get to my man, Michael Felder. Just a little background on Felder. We get into it a bit about his upbringing and all that cool stuff. I met Michael Felder online on Twitter. He would call into the Morning Jones, Bomani Jones's old radio show that he used to do. And, just started following him after hearing him on that. He was a college football guy, blogger, and he sort of just, you look at his story as just like a self-made man. You know, of course he had the help of his family, but this sort of reminds me of, the Jenna Carrado episode, where I talked to her and she was somebody that was trying to figure stuff out. And then they found what their passion really was. And they took the ball and ran with it. And also shout out to, Jenna Carrado, who is back on the East Coast. She is working with NBC Sports doing, web content, and on air stuff. Really cool stuff. I'm going to have to get her back on the show and talk to her too. But Felder, I met him online and followed him on Twitter, and really good for college sports and everything like that. One time I saw him tweet about, he was tweeting about Pretty Little Liars. And I was like, I'm reading this right? And so I tweet back at him. I say, hey, man, you watch Pretty Little Liars? And he writes back kind of defensively. He was like, yeah. And I was like, no, dude, that's awesome. That's great. So he was added to the fold of straight black dudes that watch Pretty Little Liars. And he's just a really cool dude. Hung out with him a little bit in May. And he was back in town recording some stuff for the Bleacher Report. You can download the TeamStream app and you can get updates on all kinds of teams and players. Like, for instance, right now, the Carolina Panthers are playing the Buffalo Bills right now. It's like a replay of last night's game. And let's just say you like the Panthers. You can follow them and get updates on the Panthers. And then you could even get updates on players like Cam Newton. If Cam Newton ate a cheeseburger and it didn't agree with his stomach, you would know about that with this TeamStream app. And it's really cool. And I believe those segments that Felder and his crew taped are going to be on that TeamStream app. And you can, I think some of them are already up. So I went to the Bleacher Report headquarters in New York and watched them tape a few segments for college football. And hung out with Felder, got him on the pod, met his lovely fiance, hung out with them later than I needed to do on a Monday night. and we had a good time. And on the next night, Tuesday, him and his crew came to a show that I did at Eastville Comedy Club. It was really fun and cool. It was nice that they came to the game. I almost got a little emotional, but I held it back so they would think that I was cool. And it was great that they came out. And yeah, Michael Feld is a good dude. You're going to listen to his origin story. We had a good time. This is me talking to the very engaging Michael Felder.
So your coworkers are bro-y?
Yeah.
I mean, they seem cool. They're cool.
Oh, they're really cool dudes. I genuinely love working for Bleacher Report. I love the team that I work with. But yeah, they're bro-y, which is, it's fine. I recognize bros because I'm not a total bro. I spent a lot of time with bros as a football player.
Right.
So I get it. And they all played. The guy, my producer Hunter played lacrosse at Quinnipiac.
Oh, okay. That's in my conference, Mount St. Mary's. Yeah.
Okay. One of the other guys, Adam, he played tennis at Louisville.
Okay.
Another guy swam at what's the school that's in Manhattan? It starts with an F. Fordham.
Fordham. Yeah.
Fordham. Swam at Fordham. So it's a very athlete-centric. Bro-y. I know bros.
So you call you're not a bro, but you've studied them.
I've lived a very bro adjacent life.
What does that mean? What does bro adjacent mean?
I can run with the bros.
Explain bro, because I have an idea of what it means. Yeah. Like when I think of bro, I think of Abercrombie and Fitch guy, Madras shorts. And like boat shoes or something.
I don't wear Madras shorts, but I wear boat shoes. But I'm like, to me, a bro is sort of like a meathead.
Yeah.
Like, just what do you like to do? I like to drink beers.
Mm-hmm.
We like to party.
Yeah.
We like to hang out. So it's very, a lot of people think it's negative. To me, it's just very, that's just a way of life. Like, I was at a wedding in Asheville.
Okay.
And my friends were chanting "Tees out for the bees,"
which is
tits out for the boys.
Okay.
And Asheville's not a, Asheville's very granola. It's very,
are they, they're kind of like hipstery,
not hipster, hippie.
Hippie.
They're like, very hippie, man. Yeah. It smells like weed and feet there.
They have a comedy festival out there.
Oh, like, yeah.
Laugh Your Asheville. I don't know. But I hear it's a great festival. Yeah. My friends have done it.
But it's just very, so that place, so you got all those people that are like anti-bros.
Okay.
Bro haters.
Yeah.
With bros just broing out in Asheville. It was very, my fiance, who is not a bro, who, until she dated me, didn't even like to be around bros.
Okay.
Her face is mortified that someone is chanting "Tees out for the bees" in Asheville, because she's granola, you know, she's extremely, she likes street performers and what's it called, interpretive dance.
Okay.
So this was, she was like, this is so embarrassing.
What did they call that on American Pie? They called her the girl, God, they call her a choir girl priest.
Yeah.
Who was the girl? Mina Suvari. Yeah.
Oh, hang on.
Okay.
The hardest drink order ever.
Yeah, it seems like it's Mission Impossible. We ordered two Coronas and two...
and a ginger ale.
And ginger ales. Mom, I'm not having the Coronas or any alcohol in this while we're recording this. No, but it seemed like it was Mission... We're in New York City.
Just want a ginger ale.
We're in Midtown Manhattan, and they can't... They make it seem like it's Mission Impossible.
Yeah, tourists all over the place. You'd think they'd get a ginger ale.
Yeah, all the while, there's like, this is a like, I consider this to be a nice hotel.
Yeah.
We don't have to name the hotel, but it's just like a nice hotel. It's kind of swanky.
Yeah, it's really cool and chill, and like, yeah, they have fun lounge downstairs. So hopefully they got it right this time.
Yeah.
I can get my ice cold Bud Lights and after a long work day.
Yeah. And I got to see you work, man. In the Bleacher Report. That was really cool. It was neat to see how, like, you guys were how many months of research did it take for those segments to happen?
We're shooting college football previews, so basically we started planning that in the end of June, start of July.
Okay.
And what we were trying to do was map out the points that we wanted to hit.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we came up with each little individual mini segment for the videos. We had to map out what we wanted to say. The funny thing, though, is that we don't do prep. Like, when I see people with, like, all their magazines out, like, I'm doing prep. I'm like, if this is your job, you do this every day. Like, it shouldn't be a...
You either know it or you don't.
Right. It shouldn't be, like, cramming for a test. It's one of those things where we did this in spring ball, and not much has changed since spring ball. And you know who the recruits are because we did it in signing day, and we did it all when they committed. So it's one of those things where, for me, it's not so much doing a bunch of research and prep.
Mm-hmm.
It's me just being like, okay, how are you organizing these segments? Which is, that's what we had to spend the most time on, and that's what we were arguing about the whole time.
Now, is this for top 25 or 122?
We're going, I think we're going to do 45 teams.
Okay.
So we're going to do 45 teams. It'll be everybody in the top 25 will be in it.
Okay.
And then there's other programs that you want to hit on. I mean, Michigan's not going to be a top 25 team, but you got to, Michigan, you want to give something for Michigan.
Because
fans.
It is still a big school.
It's still a big name. And same thing with, you know, and then we got down to some smaller schools that we'd like to. We're a little interested in, whether it's North Carolina, Kentucky, schools that have an opportunity for that to have interesting storylines. We do a shorter video for them, but give them some content because they are places of interest in terms
sure.
of what they bring to the table or what they have for their team.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and so you, because you all are, you had your big, what do you call your file thing, your that was on the spreadsheet, what do you call that?
Oh, the spreadsheet?
Yeah.
That spreadsheet.
No, it was something else. There was some cool terminology you guys had.
The doc?
The doc, yeah.
Yeah, that's just the spreadsheet with all of our stuff on it. But what we do is that doc is we populated from July to now with, hey, I want to say this about this team. Hey, I want to talk about this player. And from those points that we have, we fill in where we're going to go for each video. And then we fill in and go back and fill in all the players that we want to talk about, guys, the footage that we may need, so that we have everything in one place. Kind of like that's our Bible for the week.
Okay.
Where we have everything in one page, one place. You can click it here. This is everything we're going to do for Alabama. This is everything we're going to do for Michigan. Everything for Ohio State. This is the national stuff that we're going to do. And it's all put together so that you can go through, look at it, and then when the video, once we get done, it goes off to the editors and they can look at that and say, okay, I need to pull footage for guy X, Y, and Z and make sure we have these cutouts or these graphics for people.
And they're going to get that done by, like, when the season... The
graphics are... We put videos out today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow. They've been coming out already.
Quick turnaround.
That's the best part. That's why they fly us in here. That's why we shot our previews in Athens last year.
Okay.
We were there for still 3 or 4 days, shot video, and what they did is they got to New York City, and they had all this video, just a boatload of raw footage that then they had to go through and cut up and use. The problem with that is that takes time. So after we shot them, shoot them in the end of June, start of July, it takes another 2-3 weeks to get those things out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when we shoot here, the footage comes in automatically, live. Basically, it's live to tape.
Okay.
They do minimal editing. They get the videos over the top. They get the graphics package in, and then we get it out. And they don't have to waste time with going through footage. Those videos, which you saw, the video got recorded from our control room. They put it in a server. They assign it to an editor.
Mm-hmm.
An editor gets the video. He knows what it's supposed to have in it because of that document. He puts in the graphics, he cleans it up if he has to, and then that video is done.
And that's going to be hosted on
it's on the website and it's on the app.
Okay.
Yeah, by the way, folks, if y'all don't have TeamStream app, make sure you download TeamStream app, Bleacher Report.
Can I get that on Android?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have it on a BlackBerry.
Oh, God. Oh, God. You are one of the stalwart members, man. I got pissed off at one of my comedy buddies, Christian Polanco, who was a computer guy. He was my mentor as far as computer stuff is concerned. Yeah. I remember doing his podcast at one point. Mm-hmm. He still had a BlackBerry.
Yeah.
And then a few months later, I met with him and... he said, "Chris, I'm pretty much done." And he ordered his iPhone. I said, "Man, everybody's leaving. I'm still with you." I think it's just you and Brandy Brown, the comedian from Minnesota.
I'm still standing. I'm still strong.
Still strong.
I love that thing.
I used that reference. I think Friday night on stage when I was talking about I gave up sweets. I haven't had like candy or cookie for like 5 or 6 weeks. And it's just something. It's like I don't have a huge sweet tooth,
right?
But it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I feel like I could have a Reese's peanut butter cups, or if it's in the grocery store,
right,
get M&M's. But I said something about like I looked at like the M&M's in the grocery store, like I'm still standing, still strong,
still doing it.
And they were like, they didn't know. I was like, you guys gotta catch up on your
get your black movies
up. You gotta step your life up. But yeah,
I love my black. For me, for my work, for what I do, I don't think there's a better phone. The BlackBerry, I still think it's the best reception.
Okay,
consistent reception. It has a full keyboard, which makes emails, texting a lot easier. I mean, I'm a 5,000 text a month guy.
Wow.
So I can do it a lot easier on a BlackBerry.
Now, for me, the fear or the apprehension was because, you know, I wouldn't have the keypad.
Yeah.
And when I've had it for 7-8 months. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been too bad, but it's sometimes the autocorrect.
Yeah.
Like they want to give you a word and you don't want it yet.
I'm mean on text. And I send long emails, BlackBerry.
I kind of do too.
I love it. I send long emails on the BlackBerry. And the other part, I don't play games. I don't do apps. I tweet, which is easy with the keyboard. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I need email. And there's BlackBerry email is still the best email out there.
Now, I noticed that I hadn't been. I was home this past weekend doing some shows, and I was hanging out at my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that I didn't pull out my laptop at all
because
I had this phone.
Yeah.
And it's just, and I found out that this movie that I wanted to see was playing, it was going to play on Saturday, and I didn't DVR it. One of my friends said, you know, download the Fios app, and you can, it's amazing.
Right.
Now, granted, most people would know that already. They know that that's a bit, but I was pleasantly surprised. I got home last night,
and
I
worked.
Was like, it recorded. this is amazing.
I can get around, here's the big problem for me. Or not the big problem. The big thing for me is if I can't record something through Time Warner through my BlackBerry, that's okay. Because I'm at home every day.
Yeah, you're living the life.
I'm at home every day. I just do it on the DVR.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Oh, we're just laughing about the expensive prices, and it's not even the big. It's not even the big ones. New York.
Yep.
So you work at home, and what I like to do on the podcast, we want to talk about how you got from, you know, having your being a person who was self-employed.
Yeah.
Now you work at the Bleacher Report, and let's talk about your origin story. I like where you grew up.
How far back do you want me to go? Go all the way back.
Childhood, like where you grew up.
I was born in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and mom's a teacher, dad was in the military, we lived in New Mexico.
Okay.
And
Breaking Bad country.
On an Air Force base when I was a little kid. And life was, I think I had one of the greatest lives ever, because we moved back to Charlotte when I was in 93, and I've been there ever since. I don't plan on leaving. I love Charlotte.
That's what Bomani Jones said to me.
Yeah.
3 years ago, and he's in Miami.
Yeah, I think the difference is I grew up. I still see the stuff that I grew up around.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, I love Charlotte so much that like I want to move back into like when I move, I want to move somewhere that either I grew up or somewhere that I can help feel like I can make the city a little bit better.
It seems like I remember Black Enterprise called that one of the best places for black people to
live. It's a good place, and it's pretty diverse.
Mm-hmm.
There obviously are pockets of exclusive, that are really exclusive. And
like everywhere. Yeah,
and not inclusive, but I think the big thing that's changing, though, is that a lot of younger people, folks around our age, they're a lot more comfortable with diversity.
Okay.
They also don't want to live all the way out in the suburbs to get away from people. They'd rather live closer and have things to do.
That's true.
Yeah. And so that's a big culture change for the city, where areas that no one wanted to live before, like people moved. Charlotte was like Atlanta with sprawl.
Okay.
Where people moved way outside of the city and hey, it's better out here, and now they're sort of backfilling into Charlotte, which is really nice. So that's big for me. But growing up, I mean, I was going to sound like a dick, but I think my life was fantastic because I was good at everything.
You sound like a dick. You do.
Yeah. I'm
messing with you.
I feel bad saying it, but like I hear, because I listen to your show, so I hear people all the time. They're like, well, you know, I got beat up. And
did they say that?
Like, I got beat up in school. Or, you know, I wasn't with the cool crowd, and other people, you know, made fun of it. And I'm like, listen, what are you talking about? I was like one of the smartest kids in my entire school.
Were you the black Zach Morris?
Yes.
Okay.
Except where I play, was good at sports too, and he wasn't.
So you were the black Zach Morris. I was the black Kevin Arnold. that's a pretty good combo. I'd take it.
It was like for me, school came easy, and I had to do school. Mm-hmm. My parents were both teachers,
right? So was there pressure, or was it just, because I always talk about that, was there pressure for you to do well, or was it self-imposed?
I don't think pressure is the right word. They were not going to let me do anything if I didn't do well in school.
Okay.
And so
there was an understanding.
Yeah, like you don't bring C's in the house. They don't come in. And you don't bring zeros on homework in the house.
Right.
I'll never forget. In eighth grade, I got straight A's for the entire year. Whole year, all A's on the report card. And I probably spent more time grounded than kids who came home with B's and C's.
Why is that? Just your attitude?
I didn't like doing homework.
Oh, you didn't like doing the work. Okay.
But what I figured out was I could get away with doing like X amount of homework.
Yeah.
Getting a zero. I'll take some zeros on homework. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean I don't have to do the homework, but I can still get an A.
Right.
And my folks didn't like that. And they really tried to break me of that. And so they would ground me. Straight A's, but they look at the little progress report printout and be like, well, how did you have a zero here? We know that you were at home that day and you could have done the homework. Why didn't you do it? And I was like, I didn't feel like doing it. They were like, doesn't matter, you're grounded. You're going to get grounded. I was grounded a week for every zero that I got.
Damn.
And so I figured out how to make fake progress reports because I didn't want to do homework.
I used to just intercept the progress reports, but it was only a couple times.
We had to get ours signed.
Yeah.
Send them home, get them signed, bring them back. I was terrible at forging signatures.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that when I was in like fifth grade. I tried to forge a signature.
But you were getting good grades, but you just didn't do homework.
I just didn't like doing homework.
Okay.
I feel like I can get good grades on the test, do a little classwork, participate, shouldn't have to do the homework. That's not the way it works. And it took... part of the thing is I just thought I had a better way all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tried to teach me I got to live with the regular rules of the world like everybody else, which I just didn't buy. I still don't believe it all the time.
Still don't buy into it?
No. I mean, I went to college for management at UNC. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't manage anything.
What kind of management?
Just management and society. Basically, it was a business major for people that were too dumb to get into business school.
Did you think you were too dumb?
It wasn't that I was too dumb. I definitely wasn't going to do all the work that it took to get in there. It was like you had to get crazy, like good grades. You had to apply to get into business school after your sophomore year. And I was like, I'm not doing that.
But you were doing football also. You were doing sport. Was it just football? Was it just baseball?
I played football. I had to stop playing baseball in high school.
Why?
I had to make a choice, and I made a life choice when I was a sophomore in high school. I really messed up my shoulder playing football.
Okay.
And the doctor says, he goes, there's two ways we can do this. He goes, you can try and, he goes, you can stop right now, have the surgery, you'll be good as new, probably be ready to play baseball in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can try physical therapy, and you can also, you know, work on your pain thresholds and wear a harness, and you can keep playing football. And I was like, I really want to play football, and I don't want to miss games because I'm hurt. So we'll see what happens, but I'm going to play. I played.
Were you better in football or baseball?
I don't know. Probably in football.
DB?
I played defensive back from ninth grade through the rest of through college.
Were you heavily recruited at all, or did you get some schools look at you?
Yes and no. Not like Nebraska, Alabama, but... all the smart schools.
Like which one?
Ivy League, Harvard, Yale.
That's good.
Princeton.
Yeah.
And then, like, the service academies, Army, Navy, West Point. And mm-hmm. then, like, Northwestern offered me.
That's great.
Duke, mm-hmm. Wake Forest.
And you just, you went to UNC Chapel.
Yeah, I wanted to go to Carolina.
Was it just you always wanted to go there? Or?
Yeah, from when I was baby.
Okay.
I always wanted to go, and it was my grandma's favorite team when she was when we were kids, and we'd all watch Carolina games, and it just was one of those things where I was like, listen, that's where I'm going. I figured that's where I'm going to go to school. Mm-hmm. And as much as I talk about the zeros on my part, everything that I did was to go to Carolina.
Scholarships at all? School.
I guess I got a little scholarship money, but the big thing for me was academic. But the big thing for me was that's where I wanted to be at. And I wasn't going to be happy playing against North Carolina by going to Duke or Wake. I wasn't going to be happy playing all the time if I'd gone to like Army, Navy, to like a Wofford or somewhere like that.
And where's Wofford at?
It's in Spartanburg. It's a really good school. It's a really small school.
Spartanburg,
South Carolina.
South Carolina, okay. Yeah.
And I certainly wasn't going to be happy at Northwestern. Too far away from my mom.
Okay.
Too cold.
Was your dad around at all?
Yeah, my parents were together all the way through college for me.
Okay.
They got divorced when I finished school.
You were the younger brother?
Older?
Yep. Okay.
Two years older than my little brother.
It's just you and your brother?
Yep.
Okay. He just got married?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just got married. So my parents were together, and we did everything. We took family vacations, mm-hmm. and we did the whole do this, do that, dinner together almost every night, and they worked hard, and I saw my dad go and get his first master's, then get his second master's.
Okay.
Move from the classroom to administrative position. I saw my mom, really, after college, my mom got her master's. Mm-hmm. She moved from in the classroom to administration, too. And it's just one of those things where you're going to do school. And so, and my little brother, same thing, he went to end up going to A&T, but the difference between us is he had a plan and I didn't.
Okay.
So
what's he doing now?
My little brother is a structural and mechanical engineer that works for a humongous firm. Mm-hmm. He's in Houston, and he makes a ton of money.
Is that where he moved? He moved to Houston?
He actually, out of college, he moved to Chicago.
Oh.
He lived off the Magnificent Mile.
Oh, so he was balling.
Making money.
Okay. Yeah.
Doing well. Mm-hmm. And the tsunami hit, kind of screwed up his company's overseas business, what they used to do remotely. So they started getting sent out on site. He moved to Chattanooga. He worked from Chattanooga. He commuted to Alabama for a little while.
How far is that commute?
Like an hour.
Oh, okay.
About an hour and a half.
All right.
Not too bad. They're in northern Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
But then, now he's in Houston, and then after this, he's going to move. He moves back to Charlotte, I think, start of next year, and he'll be commuting to Fort Mill, which is not a bad drive.
Okay.
He had a plan, though. He knew what he wanted to be. He wanted to be an architect. He wanted to be an engineer. Yeah. That's what he wanted to be. I had no idea. My only plan I had was I wanted to get to Carolina.
What was that like? Because I always envy people, not even from a football standpoint, the fact that you played on a team. I had a comic, Pete Bladel, who played at UVA.
Yeah.
He went to UVA, but he didn't play.
Right.
But what I always envied about those you guys was just the fact that you went to a big university. You went to a football. Yeah. Even though basketball is king in North Carolina, it's still... The football team was good because we talked the last time we were talking about... You know, I like those teams. Like, I remember Natron Means. I remember, like, Ronald Curry. My cousin used to block for him. Jason Brown.
Okay. And, I know Jay Brown.
Yeah. And so I always liked those teams because living in Maryland, right. It was Jefferson Pilot Sports.
Mm-hmm.
You'd know all those guys, and I would play those video games, and I would know, like, I had like, the big... You know, we talked about that.
Yeah.
The Athlon sports book. Yeah. I knew all those guys. So there was.
I've got a Phil Still right there in my back.
Is that a newer kind?
Because No. It's not newer. It wasn't. They didn't used to sell it as. It's a lot more distributed now than it used to be. It used to be for like super insiders.
Okay.
And it's kind of got a bigger platform now.
How many teams do they give you now?
In that book, that's all of them.
So is it like...
122.
Okay, that's okay. Yep.
All right. 122. Mm-hmm. With all the new conferences and all that stuff, so...
So really what cool. was... So tell me a little bit about that experience. Like, just the fact... Not only the fact that you were on the football team, but what was that life like? Like, being on a big campus?
College for me was great.
Yeah.
Not, it wasn't the same for everybody, but college for me was fantastic. I played football. I worked at the bar that was one of my favorite bars.
They let you work?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't supposed to work, but I mean, they want you to focus on more stuff, but I...
You're not going to come out with any...
No.
Expose like Rashard.
I was a walk-on. They didn't care.
Okay. No Rashard McCants.
No.
You can't talk about him.
No. I worked at Pantana Bob's. I made tip money. It was enough cash for me to, you know, buy beer when I needed it, take my girl out to eat.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's one of those things where you're part of a... Excuse me. I was a part of a couple different communities. So I was from Charlotte. Mm-hmm. A lot of people from Charlotte go to Carolina.
How far is that?
What's 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
Hours.
That's not bad at
all. So I had friends from high school that were there.
Yeah.
I walked on the campus with a bunch of friends from high school and close nearby high schools that I already knew.
Okay.
Plus the football team. And that's like, those are your brothers.
Yeah.
So I've got friends I already know from school, from home. I've got all these teammates. And my friends from home and my teammates, a bunch of them joined different fraternities. And so you kind of get brought into that too. So I hung out at a pretty, you know, and it was really, you know, a lot of white folks, but it was a very Greek in terms of just traditional, like Sigma Chi's and Phi Delta. I hung out with those guys all the time.
Was it so you didn't have a problem, quote unquote, mixing or intermingling with?
No, I've always, the thing for me is I've always been around white people. I grew up in the suburbs.
Yeah.
I didn't go to an all black high school.
Yeah.
My high school was really diverse, but it was like 60-70% white.
Okay.
27% black, the rest Hispanic and Asian.
Yeah.
And so I'm just, they got the, people are my neighbors.
Right, right.
Those are the people I hung out with. So it wasn't weird for me.
Big deal.
No, it wasn't. It was just regular life. And I hung out with, the cool thing was being able to get along with everybody. You know,
right.
We had a kid on my team named Hood from Montclair, New Jersey, that just was, like, his nickname was Hood.
It's about maybe 20, 25 minutes away from me, yeah.
He used to wear... Black dude that had a state of New Jersey tattooed on his back.
Wow.
That said state of adversity. Used to wear jeans and Timberlands in the summertime.
Like, yeah.
And being able to, it was cool for me to be able to go, we hang out together, and because we're on a team, to go to the guys you mentioned, the short shorts and boat shoes, but all of us hang out together.
Wait a minute. He wore Tim's and sweat.
But we would go and hang out.
Hold on. Like if he's from Montclair, like Montclair is pretty, they got some money.
I don't know where he's from in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
He went to Montclair High School.
Okay.
I don't know what that is.
I just know like Montclair in general.
Oh, we have two. Well, we have two. Here's the thing that we have. There was a girl from Montclair, and she did have money. She played soccer for us.
Okay. It's a good soccer team, too, right?
Yeah, really good. Those are... A couple of my best friends played soccer. They're fantastic women. I love them. Mm-hmm. And he knew all the parts of her town, where they were.
Okay.
He didn't live there.
Oh, okay. All right.
But his best friend was from Camden.
Okay.
His best friend was from Camden, and then... What is it? Rosal wrote. What is that?
I don't really know too much. I've heard things about it. Like there's one of my coworkers. I look to him as my liaison to all of New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I'll say, yeah, I'm doing a show here.
And they're like, okay, all right.
And then
you don't want to go there.
I was like, oh, have you ever been to this place? And he's like, don't you go down there. And his voice will turn all slavey.
But But to go from him to being able, but that was one of the things. Part of is knowing people when you get there, and then the other part is being on a team. We all hung out together.
Right.
Everybody didn't hang out together all the time, but there were plenty of nights where him and a guy that, you know, that's got the most blonde hair and the frat swoop.
Sure.
End up taking shots together at a bar and enjoying it. So that was what college was like for me.
Yeah, I was, when I was down there maybe 3 years ago for a festival, it was awesome. Yeah. It was just, that's the school that I wanted to go to. And my dad was like, no, you're going to Mount St. Mary's. And I was like, all right, you're paying for it. But talking to him recently about that, he said, no, I just felt like, you know, you would get lost.
He's and, like, and the thing is that can happen to people.
Mm-hmm.
It happened to me because I had a built-in...
I don't think it would have happened to me, but like...
But everybody's different. I still, to this day, and I admit it, I don't know what a lot of like regular students did. Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't part of the community. I was part of the athlete community, part of the community, part of the Charlotte community. But I don't know what Bobby Sue from that went to, that's from Virginia, that went to UNT. I don't know what. I have no idea.
You don't know, like, the person, whoever's like the businessman. It's under, because it's so many people. What is that, 20,000 at least?
I think that's total. I think undergrad is a little bit, it was less than that. Like,
okay.
13. It's not a huge school. It's like 14,000.
Okay.
Which isn't, but that's not a. Versus like 50,000 at Ohio State or 50,000 in Texas.
Shoot, that's still bigger than we were like 13. It's right. Like liberal arts, 1,400 kids. But I just remember being down there and falling in love with that area.
I love Chapel Hill. Yeah. I can't go back very often.
Yeah, why?
Because of work.
Okay.
But also because I will spend all my money and be completely drunk for the entire time that I'm there. It's just such a good feeling to be home. It feels like home.
Yeah.
It's one of those places where we'll get obliterated, go to the old bars that we used to go to, and just get smashed. And so we did in college. It's what we do when we go back. I went back for an alumni weekend, and it felt like we were in school again.
You were turned up?
Oh, we turned down for what?
Wow.
Yeah. I like to turn up.
I don't know if I could hang with you like that. I'm just boring, dude.
It's not boring. I mean, it's just everybody's just different. Everybody's different. I like, we were talking about bros. That's how I grew up. I've been drinking for a while, and we go out and
drinking for a while.
I mean, it's not when I got to college. We drank in high school. So when we got to college, we had
already doing it.
Yeah, knew how to drink, and then you're in college, and then you get out of school, and guess what? You don't have to get up and go to class the next day.
Yeah, I didn't really do like. It wasn't until I moved to Chicago. I was 22,
right?
And I still didn't party, but that to me, that was more of an adult experience.
Yeah.
Like I'm away from home right now. I'm in another time zone,
real far,
and it's just like you start to go out. You start doing shows, doing plays, mm-hmm. and you're hanging out. Chicago's a bar town. Like that's what you do. Like you go to the bar. You go to your bar after the show. We would do karaoke on Thursday nights. That was a social thing. And then you start going to people's house parties and stuff. So, like, that's sort of what the scene was for me. In undergrad, it was just, I mean, it was so small, and there was one bar. And it was just people would drink, and I was an RA my last year.
Oh, man.
So
you just were taking people's beers.
I tried to be, like... And I think I might have told you this before, but like when I was an RA, and this was right around the time that Training Day came out.
Oh God!
So I would, myself and one of my buddies, Ramon, I would pretend like I was Alonzo, and I would say, "Hey, look, you want to get ridden up?
You want to go home? You want to go to jail?
You want
to
get ridden up, or you want to go home? Pour this beer out. Do it in your room, so I don't see it."
Yeah. I tell you what, when I moved, I stayed on campus a couple years. When I moved after my first one, because my first year in the dorms, I was hell.
Okay, so were you in the dorms the whole 4 years?
Yeah, and then I moved off campus. But I had two places. I moved off campus, moving off campus my last year. But when I was my first year, I was hell. Like just breaking stuff, throwing things off the balcony.
Jesus.
Like, just destroying things.
Football, and testosterone.
We were, yeah. We, and I got my next room assignment the next year, and the RA had to come have a meeting with me. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, you've been labeled a problem resident. And I'm like, what does that mean? And she was like, I don't know what you did last year at Erring House, but Carmichael, we're not going to do that. Please, just don't make me write you up. Mm-hmm. And it ended up working out fine, but yeah, actually it was pretty bad when I was a sophomore too. We broke a microwave, we used to break it to the pool, so spray fire extinguisher in the hallway.
What was the team like back then, and who were you playing with? Were you playing with people that made the league?
Gerald Sensabaugh, who retired last year, I think.
Okay.
Was a safety. He transferred in from East Tennessee State when they cut their football program.
Okay.
I played with Jay Brown.
Okay, yeah.
He was a center when I was there. Darian Durant, who is killing it in Canada right now.
Who's the quarterback? Was Ronald Curry?
Ron C. wasn't there. He had left a little years before. Earlier. Okay. Peppers left the year before he left 2 years before I got there.
Okay.
Trying to think of the guys that I played with that made. Oh, man.
What was the record like?
We were terrible when I was a freshman.
Did you play?
No, I was so bad.
You didn't play at all?
No.
Okay. Mm-mm.
No. No way. Are you kidding me? I would have to not drink as much and also work out way more.
Yeah.
And also not be slow.
Was it depressing not to? So you were partying, so
at the start it was, but then I realized I'm not going to play. Oh, well. They still get these sweet, sweet sweats.
Yeah.
And these brand new Vicks that aren't even out yet.
And the chicks dig that, right?
Yeah, I get. I mean, I didn't. I wasn't. I'm not going to lie and say I wasn't good at chicks because I was, but I had a girlfriend for a long time.
Okay.
I had a girlfriend. I met a girl who lived in Boston. Her best friend lived on my hall. And so, excuse me. She came to visit her best friend, and her parents had just moved to Chapel Hill.
Okay.
We met. Cute little blonde girl. Lived in Boston. I fell in love with her, and we dated from basically my freshman year all the way through my junior year.
Okay.
And then I met another girl, and we dated from my senior year all the way to 2 years, 3 years out of college.
Oh, well, so you were a monogamous.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it was. I didn't take as much advantage as some of my teammates did of this situation.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you didn't have to.
Yeah.
So nothing wrong with that.
I did the long distance thing. It was hard, but I fell in love with this girl so hard. Like it was, I was like, this is it. It's over.
You thought she was the one.
Yeah. And it didn't end up not working out, and we're still friends, and we talk, and we joke about, hey, well, you know, and she's like, if you would have just had your life together then, like you had it now, who knows? And I was just like, I got it. Okay. I went out a lot. Okay.
It's over.
I get it. You wanted to be a teacher. And teachers can't go out every single weeknight during college because they have student teaching. I wanted to hang out, and I had no plan for after school. So, got it. I get it. It's okay.
So, take us into, like, to the evolution of in the bleachers and, like, how that came about. Because, obviously, I see you today.
Yeah.
This afternoon, and you're doing, like, your thing. You're speaking eloquently on
you speak so well.
Not even that, but just on the subject matter.
Right.
Like about these guys I've never heard of and the spread off. He's opening up because I just like, oh, he scored a touchdown. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's just like that guy is fast.
Actually, what happened? It started in college.
Okay.
Once I realized I wasn't going to play, I had to find something that I was going to do.
Okay.
In terms of at practice and something that I cared about. To get me going. And you're right, I was depressed. I was really depressed early. That's when I first realized I had depression. Mm. That's when I first started going to therapy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was really... And I'll tell you what. North Carolina football saved my life probably because they realized, wow, this kid is... He's about to go off the deep end. He's not playing. He's real upset. They got me in therapy.
Wow.
Really helped me. Gave me the tools to work, understand. I need to find happiness in myself so that I can get through every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the happiness that I found was that even though I wasn't going to play, and me and my position coach butted heads a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I got the guy that recruited me got fired.
Mm.
And once he got fired, the new guy and I just didn't get along very well.
Was it part of it? I know part of it was him, but was it a part
me
of
going
you
out?
That was like, my guy left. Was there resentment?
100%. Okay. I was upset about that, about my guy leaving. He didn't like that I went out. He didn't understand why the other... everybody loved me.
Yeah.
He didn't understand why the other players liked the guy
that wasn't
playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So, we butted heads, and what I had to find was something for me that was going to make me happy. And so, I love football still. And so, yeah. I would watch tape and watch film and learn defenses and learn this. And even though I was playing scout team, it was the best experience for me because I got to play a new defense every week.
Mm.
And I got to watch new offenses every week. And I got to go up against different things. And I was processing
sure.
and learning. And I learned a lot. And from learning a lot to when I got to school, I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to get a real job soon. But right now, because I still don't know what I'm going to do, I'm going to get a job with the Y. I worked at the Y when I got out of school. I was helping my mom when my parents went through their divorce. I was staying at living with my mom and just making sure everything was going to be okay. And
mm-hmm.
my little brother was at school still. And I worked at the Y. And I got promoted.
Did you work with Rod?
No. We worked at the same Y at some point, I think. Okay. But I had no idea.
Okay, and we're talking about Rod from the Blackout.
Yeah, Rod.
Do you ever see him at all?
I've seen him every now and then randomly. I saw him one time randomly at this bar, Whiskey Warehouse.
Okay. Cool.
But I was working at the Y. I was working in aquatics, which is why I probably never saw him. We worked at the same place.
Okay.
I got promoted. I ended up being sort of like an assistant aquatics coordinator. Got to wear shorts every day, which I love.
You would wear shorts in the wintertime.
I wear shorts year-round. I love it. I'm a sweaty dude. I sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Best way to stop sweating, get some air circulating in that undercarriage. It's the best way.
Is it? Does it get cold in Charlotte?
I work from home.
No, I mean just in general though. Like,
it snowed a lot this year.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right. Okay,
car got stuck.
Wow,
car.
You guys get 2 inches. It's the apocalypse down there.
They shut it down.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. This we got like between 8 and 10 inches this year. So
wow.
My fiance was out of school for a week.
Did they have to make it up?
Nope. State of emergency.
Okay.
Didn't have to make it up. So, it came out well. But so, I started learning a lot about football and learning mm-hmm. more and watching film with guys that I thought could help me learn more.
Sure.
And I was working at the Y, and I still was just, you know, watching football and doing stuff. And one night, was it New Year's? A little after New Year's, I was at my best friend's house, and his dad, we were talking about football, and his dad goes, "Felder, you ought to write some of this stuff down." So, what do you mean? He goes, "Just write some of it down." So, I started a blog.
Mm. And this is one of your friends?
This is my friend, yeah, one of my buddies who played football with me, Jay okay. Spence. He was a quarterback.
Okay.
Broke my finger. So, I was all twisted like that. He dislocated it.
In practice.
Okay. Pulled it out of the glove. Was sticking with it here. He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. But his dad told me, just, you need to write some of this stuff down. So I started writing, and I had some really, really crappy blogs. Like, I think it was just called, like, Just Balls or something. It was so bad.
Just Balls with a Z?
I was an idiot. Like, I was a guy that listened to sports radio, and I thought that's the way you had to be to have success. And so
instead of, like, trying to carve out your own idea,
I wanted to try and do what you thought.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That happens a lot. Yeah.
It sucked. It was so bad. People were reading it, but it sucked. And then I did Football from Mass to Miami. I figured I would zero in on something.
What is it again?
Football from Mass to Miami, from Massachusetts to Miami. It was ACC football.
Okay. Gotcha.
And I was doing that, and it was okay. And I was doing, like, work. I was working, but I was writing, trying to write, like, every day, and trying to get updates and do all this stuff.
And what year are we talking? You graduated.
2008.
So you graduated when?
Seven.
Okay.
2008. I'm writing, and It makes me feel good. It's one of those things where I hear people talk about they want to do something, and you know this. I mean, you know exactly what it's like to try and run down a dream.
Oh yeah.
Where people are, and I hear people complain about, well, you know, I have to work our day job, and so I don't have time. I'm like, listen, dude, I worked a day job, and then guess what? I got home and I wrote.
Dude, that's one thing that I'm like. I have friends that I love and respect. You see them on Facebook sometimes on their podcast, and it's like somebody on Facebook wrote one time. She said, "Like, yeah, I'm so glad I got these upcoming gigs because I thought I was gonna have to get a day job." Yeah. It's like, are you welcome to my world?
See, mine is the opposite. Yeah. What I like, because the idea of getting a regular job now for me, don't want to do it.
Of course, now.
But the big thing is I see the opposite. I see this guy who works with my fiance. He's a teacher too. He hates his job. Mm-hmm. He's like, I want to do like you. And I was like, have you started writing at all? Mm-hmm. Have you done any of the work? And he's like, man, you know, I just wish you could just have. I was like, nobody knows that you even exist.
Yeah.
Why would any, like, you have to start the work. And there's been plenty of times that I've fallen asleep at the computer after working a double, falling asleep at the computer trying to get an article out, waking up in the morning and writing before I left to go to work. And so I started doing that. And Football for Mass in Miami got a decent following. And I was tweeting, and it was okay.
Was this is what you started?
Yeah.
You started from Mass in Miami.
Yep.
Now, what was the impetus? Were you just saying, well, I like ACC, that's what I know, I'm going to start it there?
Void in the space.
Okay, so you just noticed the void.
There was an SEC football blog, there was Big Ten football blog. There was nothing that just did, there were individual ACC schools, but no one just did ACC football. So I said, there's a space, I can fill it.
Oh, okay.
And it was okay, I worked hard at it. But Brian Sikowski, who actually started in the Bleachers.net.
Okay.
Noticed, asked me to be on his show. He had a podcast.
Okay.
He asked me to be on the In the Bleachers podcast. And so I joined him on the In the Bleachers podcast. It went surprisingly well for a first timer who'd only done a little bit of radio, and that's about it. Excuse me. So it went okay. He said, I want to have you back on. So he had me back on a couple times. Then he asked me to have me on some more. So he had me on some more. Then he asked me if I wanted to write for his website, which had a bigger following. I said, you know what? Yeah, I'd love to. So I joined on and wrote with him. Mm-hmm. He got a job refereeing, like FCS football.
Okay.
So he said, I think I shouldn't have the website anymore. Will you take it over? Okay. So I took it over. And I started, he was covering everything. And what I did when I took it over, I said, listen, I think the best thing that I can do is dial this in to really just FBS football.
What's that mean?
The football bowl subdivision.
Okay.
Top one, the 122.
Okay.
So I dialed it into that, really focused in on BCS teams in Notre Dame. And dialed it in. And
did you have to focus on Notre Dame because it's Notre Dame?
Well, I think that they're in the same conversation as everybody else, I think, when you talk about it's like, now it's called the Power Five conferences. Okay. But
what's the kid?
Power Five.
Sidebar for a second. Mm-hmm. What's the kid we were talking about maybe a year or two ago? The quarterback,
Everett Golson.
Yeah,
he's back at school now, right? Back at school.
Did he play last year?
No, was suspended. I believe.
Great.
Cheating, I think, on a test.
Okay.
So he took his year of punishment off and sat out, and now he's back.
What's your projections on him?
I think he's going to be the starter this year.
Okay.
And I think he'll be fine. I saw him in Oregon at the Elite 11.
Uh-huh.
Kick and sling it. He's got a nice arm, quick release. He's really light on his feet. I think he's going to be pretty good.
Elite 11 is it run by Gruden?
Trent Dilfer.
Trent Dilfer. Those stories on ESPN, I don't know what it is. Look, dude, I don't know what it is, man, but that has the power to just tap into your soul.
Well,
and you get emotionally invested in these
guys.
Imagine
being around. I got to be around. I spent a week around all those kids.
Did you cry?
No, they're playing football there. But I don't watch it on television.
Yeah, okay.
So I just got a chance to know them, to talk to them. We talked to a kid who just committed to Florida State, DeAndre Francois. He talked about, he's like, listen, I got to make it. You know,
Explain the Elite 11 for those who don't know.
The Elite 11 is a quarterback camp. It's a competition, actually.
Yeah.
Where they started surrounding cities. They have regional quarterback competitions. Mm-hmm. If you win your region, you move up. You get an invitation to the Elite 11. There's 18 kids there at the Elite 11.
Mm-hmm.
And they had 18 kids, and all those kids compete in the classroom, on the like chalkboard. They compete on the field, and there's only one winner. So they compete, and the first couple days is just the Elite 11 kids there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes the opening.
So it's the Hunger Games for young quarterbacks. For
young quarterbacks. And then the opening starts. And the opening is when they have the top 150, 160 high school football players.
Okay.
They set them up into teams. The Elite 11 quarterbacks quarterback different teams to try and win, keep trying to win the competition, while these other kids are really at a showcase event to play against the other best kids in the country. And so it was really cool to see.
I didn't know it was that deep.
It's cool to see that much talent.
I thought it was just the QBs. Wow.
Nah, it's cool to see that much talent around just all a bunch of kids that never would have met each other. We got a kid here, Brandon Wimbush, who's from New Jersey.
Okay.
Seeing him get to go hang out with kids from California, kids from Texas. It was really cool just seeing different kids from all over the place come
it's
together.
Something amazing about, like, it's just like the way sports brings people together.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, and back to me getting emotional over it. I don't know, because I think Trent Dilfer was doing a speech. Yeah. I don't know. Was Jameis Winston in that?
Jameis Winston was in the Elite 11.
Did he win it?
I think he did.
Because I think that's the one that I saw. It might have been, what, like maybe three years ago? And I think that was one that I saw, and it was just like Trent Dilfer was like, and you guys are going to get... And I was just like, why am I crying at 11:30 at night watching a rebroadcast of this thing? Yeah.
Watching Jordan Palmer, Carson Palmer's little brother.
Yeah.
Watching Jordan Palmer work with these kids, I thought was the best part of it, because he gets in there and he talks to them and he works with them, and he's helping kids out. He's helping this kid, Torrance Gibson, who wants to play quarterback. You don't want to be a wide receiver. I want to be a quarterback.
This is the guy you were talking about
at work. Yeah. Yeah. And I got a chance to talk to Torrance, and he literally looked at me dead in the eyes. I said, the one question that nobody's asked him. People always ask him, what position do you want to play? I asked him, I said, Torrance, I said, why? What makes Torrance Gibson a better quarterback at college than a wide receiver? And he was like, listen, I just think it's my mindset. I'm going out there to win. I'm a leader. I want to play quarterback. I want to prove to everyone that I can do it.
Is he black?
Yeah, he is
black. Okay. All right.
He's good. This kid's an amazing athlete. If he could be a great wide receiver. I think if he gets some good coaching and consistent coaching, he can play quarterback. So
what school?
I don't know where he's going to go.
He doesn't know yet.
He has no idea. Yeah.
They decide in December usually, right?
February.
February
is when you sign.
Okay.
A lot of kids have committed already. February is when you can sign. So
okay.
We'll see what happens between now and then. But being out there was really cool, and I got to see Everett Golson out there. He's as a counselor.
Oh, okay.
And he was throwing the football. He looked good. Bryce Petty, the kid from Baylor, looked really good. Connor Cook from Michigan State looked good.
Talk about the kid you were talking to before I interrupted you.
DeAndre Francois just talked about football was part of his life, and they've got to be good. He wants to be able to take care of his family, and it's just really like some of these kids, and I think it's cool because some of these kids are from different backgrounds. They're all from different backgrounds. There's poor white kids from the middle of nowhere in California. There's poor black kids from the middle of nowhere in Florida. There's rich kids, like and they all get together and play football, and it's just it was a really cool thing. So it was really just a nice experience being out there. I hate traveling, but it was nice to be out there.
And where was that? Where were you?
Oregon.
Okay.
I didn't realize it got that
hot. How was that?
I didn't realize it got that hot out there.
For some reason, I want to visit the Pacific Northwest. Let me tell you something.
Look at your boy right here.
You tan.
Look at that tan.
Oh, wow.
That's from a month ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think there's a comedy festival called the Bridgetown Comedy Festival.
I've heard of it.
So I'm gonna maybe submit and try.
Where did I hear about that from? Stop Podcasting Yourself. Two comedians do a little podcast.
Okay.
They're from Canada though, and I think they go down to that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
They're from Vancouver.
All right. Yeah. I wanna do that. I wanna visit. So you take over in the bleachers in 2008?
2009.
2009.
I get over in 2009.
And you focus it on the
big schools, big teams, bigger stories, and two things I realize I'm really good at. talking about actual football, schemes, why things happened, and I actually read. So when things happen in terms of NCAA sanctions or rules violations and stuff, I don't have a problem going through the rule book and pulling out the exact things that I need instead of just guessing. A lot of people just guess. So those two things worked out well for me, and I figured out that's my spot, that's my lane. I'm really good at the both of those things, and I just worked at it every day. I worked at it every single day. I wanted to try to write every single day, and I broke up with my girlfriend at the time. I had to move back in with my mom, which is a humbling experience. You move back in with your mom, but I got a great family. And
you were living with the girl at the time?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got a great family, and they helped take care of me, and it was one of those things where they're like, listen, it's going to be okay. You know, you got some time. You just work hard. Just work hard. I was doing, I did a lot more radio, and I was self-promoting and doing all that stuff, and I quit my day job. And
what was your day job? What were you doing?
At this point, I had left the Y, and I was working as a customer service representative with True Green.
Okay. Formerly at Kimlon.
I hated the job so much. Okay. They wanted me to not only like go out and help customers. They wanted me to like sell more, push product.
Yeah,
I'm not good at that.
Did they know that you were a sports guy, like a blogger?
Yeah, they didn't know when they hired me. They kind of found out like as I, as I would, you know, at lunchtime I go outside and I'm doing radio.
Okay.
To go back in, I show up late to work because I was trying to get a story up. Why are you late? I was worried. I had something I was doing. So, but I just didn't like the job. And it's not a bad company to work for. It just wasn't for me.
It just wasn't you.
Yeah. And so, I finally just quit. And I think anyone that's heard that episode of The Morning Jones, you know, I just literally quit my job.
Did I hear that one?
The Mavericks won the title. And I was like, if the Mavericks can win the title, I could do anything.
So, this is 2010.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've hit that. I'm out. 2011.
Okay, 2011. Yeah.
I'm out. I quit.
And what was the feeling? Was it fear involved? Were you just like...
Nah.
You're just like, you're just...
I'm done. I quit. The guy was like, well, we need to have an exit interview. And I went outside and put shorts on. Came back inside, did the interview in shorts with sunglasses on. Told him, listen, man.
Why the costume change? It wasn't a costume change.
It was
that's who you really
it
were.
It was changing back to who I really was. A tire
deep shit.
I was tired of wearing khakis every day, and it's summertime, dog. I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
And then I
what did they say in the exit interview?
The guy was like, he was trying to go through the formal interview, and I was just like, look, man, just get this over with.
It's over with,
homie. And he was like, why? He was like, well, I was like, listen, I'm trying to go to the pool and drink champagne today. I don't have, like, I'm not here for this.
Now, were you living at home still?
Yeah.
What did your mother say? You quit your job, boy?
Pretty much. Yeah. That's a good impersonation of it.
Because
I was going to say that it was racist, except it wasn't.
Sounds exactly like that. Mother.
No, she didn't say anything, actually.
Oh, she didn't?
I told you. My family's great, man.
They had your back. That's good.
I told her, I said, Mom, I can't do it. She goes, I know. You've been miserable. She goes, so what are you going to do now? I said, Mom, give me a year. Give me a year to grind, and let me just see what happens. I got a job doing high school football stuff, covering high school football, being an on-air personality. It's the first time I was ever on camera. Doing high school football stuff, it sucked. It was terrible. I was bad, real bad at it. But I worked. I worked really hard at it. And I was doing high school. I was running high school football scores. And running in the bleachers as well. Running the podcast. And I started having the podcast. There was a point where I was doing 3 podcasts a week. I was calling people, emailing people to book guests. To get them on the show. I taught myself how to edit. Get the shows. Cut them. Get them out. Put them out to the people. Let's do this. Like I kept doing it. So I was doing that, and that's what I did. And I did high school football, and I was making. I mean, there were months when I was, you know, $500 until I had that month. And I was like, man, I got no money. My mom helped me. My grandparents helped me out. As long as, if I go visit my grandparents, go take care of them, they would give me a little bit of money. So I go, I drive to Fayetteville, do my high school football stuff from there, running the scores and everything, getting scores from other people and keying them into different websites. I would do that. My grandparents, I'd take my grandparents out. Grandparents would give me a little money. Got enough money to keep the car running, do what I got to do. And I'm living this life, and it's me. I'm just doing it myself.
Was there ever apprehension, or did you just, it just seemed like you just sort of kept your head down and just kept plowing forward?
Dude, I couldn't imagine myself failing. And I think part of that is the way that I grew up, and that I was good at everything, and it worked. Everything always worked out for me. I couldn't imagine myself failing.
But in a way, it seems like it's almost like
I
shortchanging yourself.
I had to make it. Is what I felt like.
But it's like you still put in the work though.
Oh,
it's not like you were good at stuff, but you still put in the work.
Oh yeah. No. The idea that I worked. I worked when I was in high school. I worked to be good at football. I worked to be good at school. I did work. I didn't like homework.
Right.
But I did the work. I did the work for this web to keep the website running. I did the work to get people on the podcast. I did the work to learn how to edit podcasts. I did the work to do all that stuff.
Yeah.
But when the idea, and it's going to sound so cliche, but failure wasn't an option.
Sure.
Because I didn't want to go back and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, January rolled around, and I quit my job in June. It's July, August, September, October, November. January rolled around after a Christmas where I couldn't afford to get anybody any gifts. Maybe one of the shittiest feelings I've ever had. And they knew I couldn't afford to get anybody any gifts, but it just sucks to not be able to do anything for the people that are helping you. January rolls around, and I'm looking at, where can I get a job where I can still write that's not like a real job? I was thinking about getting a job at Pizza Hut to be a delivery driver so that I could still tweet and write while I was doing that and make some money. And I got a phone call from Bleacher Report about a position. And you know that move where you try to like a girl calls you and you're like, she's like, hey, do you want to go out for dinner? And you're like, oh, no, let me see what my schedule looks like. I don't know if I have time for you. And I was like, well, you know, like, this is a very interesting opportunity. I absolutely want to think it over. Let's set up a call. I'm very interested. At least let me hear the offer. But I'm like, yo, are they going to give me money? I'll do it. So we talked, and I ended up getting hired as a full-time writer.
So they had been watching you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And other people had recommended me, and I got the job when I was just, like, looking at my bank account, looking at my savings account, being like, I don't know.
This is what?
2012,
okay.
So I get the job, and I'm thin. Just money thin. I got to repay stuff. Like, I charged up my credit card. I got to pay down my credit card. I'll never forget. I screwed up. It was a Michael Felder human error. I didn't fill out my paperwork correct with HR. I didn't get a check for a month.
Oh, shit.
I was like, oh, no. I'm supposed to have money now. And at the same time is when I met my now fiance.
Okay.
So she's like paying for dates when we go out, and like I was like supposed to get paid one day and I didn't get paid, and we were going out of town for we were going to Chapel Hill for the spring game.
Okay.
And she's like, well, do you want me to just get it? And I was like, how about this, can you just loan me the money and I just pay you back the money, because I really don't like when you just like put your card down. I'm just like your little like bitch boy, like I don't like that. So we did that, and then I'll never forget, I got home from Chapel Hill Sunday. We went out to the bar, and I had the last of the little bit of money that she loaded. We went to the bar, hung out. We spent the night together, and I woke up the next day with an email that said, something like your remuneration hit or whatever, and I was like, let me hit that bank account and see what's up. I got a month and a half's worth of checks all at once, and I was like, nice.
ball so hard.
I went right to the bank. I was like, here's your cash.
Yeah.
This is it. And so, and we had been dating. I mean, and keep in mind, we had just started dating.
Okay.
I got the job in signed the contract in February. I met her the last week of February.
Oh, okay. Of 2012.
Of 2012.
Okay.
And then I started working. And I was like, you know what I can afford to do now? Move out of my mom's house.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
So I started looking for apartments. And she was looking for an apartment, too. And she goes, do you know that we could, like, maybe just... And I was like, this is March, April. This is May, 3 months in. 3 months we've been dating. She brought it up, and I was like... She goes, how about this? What if we sublease somewhere for the summer? See how it works.
See how it works, yeah.
We moved in together in May. And we've been living together ever since.
Oh,
it worked out. She's sweet. Cute little blonde girl. That she's from Michigan. She went to Michigan State.
Okay.
She's a teacher. She's got a lot of patience, which is good because I'm an idiot. And not like in the traditional, like, oh, you know, men are dumb.
Yeah.
But like, I do dumb stuff a lot. Like, I stabbed myself with a knife trying to take a pit of the avocado.
It doesn't seem like you would do something like that around the kitchen.
Cause I'm real good.
Like, your Instagram, like, yeah. I want to move in with you.
I cook all that food.
I know you do. You gave me a good recipe on cheeseburgers one time.
Yeah.
But it was something like, I forgot what you season it. And then you put it in the freezer for 15 minutes or something?
Yeah. That's just so the burgers stay together. You don't have to go 15, but as long as... Because what happens is a lot of people, they overwork the meat.
What do you do just to make... Just take me through...
Like a burger?
Making a regular burger. And we'll get out of here in a second.
No problem. I'm not in a rush. So regular burger, ground beef.
80-20.
I'm an 80-20 guy.
You told me 80-20.
I'm an 80-20 guy.
Yeah.
Give me that fat. I don't eat burgers a lot, mm-hmm. but when I do, I want them to be really... Give me that juiciness.
Okay.
And depending on... I usually go, you know, a little seasoned salt, although I've been cutting back on the real salt, on salt in general.
I don't really use the salt.
But I go pepper, cumin, a little chili powder, a little red pepper. I like it spicy, a little red pepper flake in there.
Mm.
And then I get in there and I have latex gloves in my kitchen side because okay. I don't like the way the meat feels on my hands.
Yeah.
Which is probably weird for someone
to cook. My mom would like you.
But I get in there and I get my burgers out. And depending on what kind of burger I'm going to make, I've been on a real kick of using English muffins as buns.
Mm.
The nooks and crannies, they stand up. And then they, when you toast them, they don't break down like a bun, like a full flat
okay.
bun.
All right.
They hold up better to the juiciness.
Okay.
You can put them on the grill. I like to cook my burgers medium well, usually medium. I put both bacon, jalapeno, cheese. If I got an onion, I can grilled onion on there. I like a grilled onion. I started making my own like sauces. I got like a sriracha yogurt with a little cinnamon sauce. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It cuts through real well. And that's it. I mean, put it on a bun. I like to make like a garlic paste. You take a clove of garlic, you wrap it, pull olive oil, wrap it in foil.
Okay.
Roast it and put it in the oven. You do it on the grill. But you roast it, and then when you squeeze, you cut the top off. And then when you squeeze, the little clove of garlic comes out of the little shell.
Yeah.
And then it spreads like a butter.
Oh.
Like the roasted garlic spreads like butter. That's really good to put on there.
Now, see, I don't have a grill. I have, my parents gave me, I haven't used it yet, but they, this thing called the New Wave.
Yeah. I've seen that. I watch a lot of infomercials on that.
See, my parents are upset in their old age. They really like that stuff. And I don't really use the microwave that much either,
right.
Anyway.
I'm not a microwave guy.
And they, you know, what do they cook? They cook like sausages and
yeah.
stuff on there.
You got toaster oven?
No.
That's the banger right there.
That's what you need?
You can roast... I can roast the garlic in it. Roast garlic in a toaster oven.
Okay.
Wrap it in foil, put it in the toaster oven. 15, 20 minutes, come back, it's done.
I'm going to try... I'll probably be hitting you up about the burger.
No problem. Toaster... The toaster oven is one of my favorite things in the entire kitchen.
What about chicken? when you do like chicken
fried?
Well, just like if you fried it just put it in the oven. Like, do you, what kind of batter do you use?
No batter. I'm a dry. I'm a breading guy.
The breading, like the the Washington breaded stuff. Or?
I started using self-rising flour.
Okay.
Self-rising flour with a little cayenne pepper, whatever spices you like in your fried chicken. I go cayenne pepper. I go get a little chili powder. I go salt and pepper, a lot of pepper in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually soak it in buttermilk. I try to soak it for at least an hour in buttermilk. The longer, the better.
Do you wash it off? They say you're not supposed to. Some bullshit report.
I don't wash the
buttermilk. Chicken? No, the chicken.
Well, when I use it?
Like when you first take it out, do you soak it at all? You don't?
No, I take it out of the thing. I put
My
it in
mother
buttermilk.
Would hate you.
What?
These things you're supposed to wash it out with vinegar. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I'm sure some people do. It's never bothered me before. I ain't been sick yet. So
you do the buttermilk.
Buttermilk, coat it in a little buttermilk, let it absorb some of that, throw it in the breading, bread it up. Some people like the double bread. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Bread it up, throw it in the deep fryer, done.
Cool.
And the biscuits. Oh, one thing I do, and this is
something. You make your biscuits from scratch, don't
you? Oh, yeah. I'm a...
Not that Pillsbury bullshit.
No. I haven't eaten a biscuit like that in years.
Okay.
I make... Biscuits are easy. That's 2 cups of self-rising flour, a quarter cup of shortening,
mm-hmm.
and I like to mix that together first, maybe a pinch of sugar, mix that together first, then a cup of buttermilk, use it to taste. You don't want a really wet dough, but you don't want it to be too dry. Excuse me. Then you... knead it, roll it out, don't overwork the dough, get your biscuit cutters, cut them out.
Cool. I wanted to say a couple more things about college football. You mentioned, and I should have said it before, but you mentioned you were talking about NCAA sanctions. How do you feel about college players and how they're treated, you know, as far as like getting paid? If they go to Papa John's, they get suspended for a year.
I'd love to see everyone get paid.
Mm-hmm.
College athletes, pro athletes, regular guy at a job. Mm-hmm. If you get a raise, get money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the way I've always been. Get money. And so, I would love to get a check. I know some of my teammates could have used a check. And everybody, there's this big, I don't know if it's class warfare. Some of it really does feel a little bit like racism. But I think in general, there's a sense of other people trying to decide who you don't deserve this, or that's enough for you.
Yeah.
And, or, well, if you're not doing that, you're not doing it right, or you're lying. And every time someone says something about a kid lying when it comes to meals or money in college, I think about the times that, because I had a job and because my family could afford to give me money.
Right.
Although, my freshman year, they stopped giving me as much money as they used to because I spent way too much at bars.
Yeah.
But when you can afford stuff, I mean, I've put $100 bill down on a teammate's cell phone bill so he can keep his phone on.
Wow.
My family's taken plenty of kids out for dinner because they didn't have a meal that they used to not do meals on the weekend. So my family would be like, hey, you know, grab a couple of your teammates, take them out to dinner. My best friend's family used to take people out to dinner all the time because that's a way that you can, hey, we're going out to dinner with someone's family, it's okay. And I used to go, I had a meal plan. Other guys don't have a meal plan. They only have the athlete. The football where you eat on the training table. I've swiped 12, 13 guys on my meal plan. They go upstairs and eat and get some food so that we can make sure we're eating. Like, it's a real thing that exists.
Yeah.
And now they're giving people unlimited meals, which I think is going to help a lot. But ultimately, this is one of those things where I wonder how it's going to work out, because what people don't know is you get a meal check.
Okay.
And the meal check is supposed to cover all of your meals that aren't served at the facility.
Mm.
Now, if they make it unlimited meals, these guys aren't going to get meal checks anymore. And I wonder how that's going to work, because that meal check is what guys use to... If your parents can't afford to pay for your cell phone bill,
you're paying for other shit.
You pay for it out of your meal check.
Right.
If you live off campus or whatever and you'd like to have food in your house, you use that meal check.
Right.
So you got to put gas in your car and your parents can't just send you money. You got to use that meal check. And if they cut that or they don't get it, I wonder how that's going to work out, because it's going to be hard times for some folks who... It's nice that, you know, you to have food and always be able to go get food, but a little money always helps. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Do you think that Shabazz Napier post game speech shed a little light on it for like mainstream America?
I think people hear what they want to hear.
Okay.
So people that were automatically against it are just going to keep being against it. Mm-hmm. There's just people talking bad about that kid. Like, oh, he's never been hungry. He's, look at him. He's an athlete. He's never been hungry.
Yeah.
And so they don't realize that hunger can mean different things to different people.
It's, yeah.
You know, especially when you're burning, you know, thousands of calories every day. Guess what?
Right.
Just because you had a foot long from Subway doesn't mean you're not hungry when you hit the sheets at night.
Like, yeah.
I was on hard gainers. I weighed 175 pounds when I went to college.
Okay.
They put me on hard gainers. I came home for Christmas. I weighed 225. Mm. But I had food. I could eat.
Yeah.
And I was so hungry. I was working out twice a day. I'd eat a foot long meatball sub at night, and I would wake up hungry because I was burning so much energy, so many calories. So I think that everybody's looking at, oh, well, they see he did have this meal or he had that, and sometimes it's not enough food.
Yeah, because it's like you want these guys to be
gain weight, to maintain weight.
You want them to be these gladiators and mm-hmm. you make win, and it's like you hold these kids up to these high standards, and then when they fail, you lambast them.
Yep.
And then it's just like, but they're kids.
Yeah,
but they really are kids.
It's the worst part of my job. And you didn't get to see it today, but usually they joke with me about the comments.
Well, I heard like all the stuff that's not going to be on camera.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, I get that goes part and parcel with the business.
It's I don't mind. Like, let me. That's a lie. I do mind when people come at me. I hate it.
What is that like? Because you're somebody that people they want you to say what you.
Yeah.
They respect your opinion, and then sometimes when it doesn't go their way,
they don't like it.
Yeah,
I hate it. It's not that I'm sensitive. I just think people are wrong. So when they come at me,
yeah,
I'm just like, you're dumb. You don't know. You don't realize what I'm saying. I'm sorry that you can't read, or I'm sorry that you misheard something, but I said it's exactly how I meant it.
Yeah.
Please stop. And then they disappear.
That you're taking, because you kind of have to take a bit of a clinical approach to it. These factors lead up to this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll deal with it, but there's a lot of times I've had to just step away from Twitter because people are just so stupid I can't deal with it. But when it happens to kids that change their commitments, and then you have grown adults, 35-year-old men.
Yeah.
Just berating a 17-year-old because he didn't go to his college. It's mm-hmm. That's the worst part of this job, and it stinks, but it's the reality of the situation that these people are so involved in sports, they forget that it's a game, they forget that they're not playing in the game.
Right.
Like, the idea that someone that roots for Alabama wants to win more than the people that are actually playing for Alabama mm-hmm. is insane.
Black quarterbacks, is it getting better?
Yeah, it's not going to be easy, but I think also a lot of the coded language is being weeded out, and mm-hmm. there are people that understand it now, and that's one of the things that I don't think you had five to 10 years ago.
Am I crazy for feeling the way that I feel?
No, and I feel that's what I'm saying is,
yeah.
And now it's not just black people being like, oh, see, that was racist.
Yeah.
When you said that was racist. Now there's a lot of really good writers that I really respect, white dudes that will say the exact same. They're like, mm-hmm. Hey, listen, what do you mean? He's a runner. He's not a runner. He doesn't run.
Yeah.
He can't run. Someone said, called Teddy Bridgewater a dual threat, and I saw plenty of writers come out and say, that's, you're an idiot. Have you watched him?
He's kind of like a pocket
guy. He's a pocket passer.
Yeah.
He doesn't run. He's not a runner. So that's cool.
Because I remember, I was going to the movies this morning. I was listening to Colin Cowherd.
You're a movie in the morning guy?
Yes. Cheaper.
I love movies in the morning. I like that there's no people there.
10:15 screening.
I love
get
that.
On up.
That, I love that. Because I love that there's no... I don't like people. I don't like being touched. I don't like being touched. I don't like being close to people. I don't want people around me. And so I just can't... I can't deal with it. So it's nice. That's why I go... I'm off on Fridays during the season.
Yeah.
I try to go see a movie at least every other week. And I can't wait. That's my time. I get my popcorn.
Yeah.
I get my drink. just me in my seat, three rows in, or three chairs in. I put my hat down on one chair so nobody can sit next to me.
Yeah.
I take an apron or I take a big towel, lay it over me so I don't get that popcorn grease all over me.
Wow, you really...
I just go to work. I run pee the movie, so I have it on my back screen of my phone.
I try to pee before. Like, I can't. I don't like missing anything.
I love Run Pee.
That's so Run Pee is what explained to you. Run, told me about it.
RunPee.com. It's an app that basically watches. They go and watch the movie. Mm-hmm. They let you know when it's a lull in the action. They let you know how long the lull asks for, or yeah. lasts for, and then they tell you what happens during that lull. So it's like, hey, in whatever movie it is, 35 minutes in, when the main character says, "Don't you know what I'm talking about?" There's a 4-minute time for you to go pee.
Okay.
Click here to see what happened during that 4 minutes. All right. It's just a musical montage of her jogging around town. You don't miss anything. So
okay.
I love it. That's when I go get my popcorn refills.
Do you do AMC?
Love it.
Stubbs. AMC Stubbs. Oh. I just renewed today. That's the reason why I went today.
The greatest.
Yeah.
AMC Stubbs is the greatest rewards program that I think it's the best. And maybe it's because I go see a lot of movies. And so the Regal rewards program is straight trash.
Oh, it is?
Trash.
I signed up. Like, I got a card, but there's not many near me.
You can get a free small soda after you spend $50.
Yeah.
A free small soda? What am I going to do with that?
Yeah, do you have any, like, Alamo Draft House franchises in Charlotte?
We might. I don't know. I don't like that. I don't like that movie experience.
It's no? Fun for me. You ever been?
I've been to, we have a place called Studio Movie Grill.
To give you, so it's like bar food and drinks. Yeah. Why don't you like it?
I don't like those low lights that they have and all the little
seats. You can't really see your food.
Well, but then they still have those low lights that, even though you can
see like
your
it food, to be dark.
I need it to be dark, and I don't like the in and out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like people going in and out of the movies when I'm in there. I want people to sit down.
Yeah, that's not a good experience.
I can go get popcorn, but I don't want other people moving around. There's a problem.
I don't know. I like it. I was thinking about going to see Guardians of the Galaxy tomorrow. I got
nice.
Time to kill before the show. Everybody's going crazy over it, so I want to see it.
I want to see it, too.
So we talked about movies. Oh, so, yeah, where was I going to go with that? We were talking... Oh, Colin Cowherd said what I think I've felt this way for so long. Like, Cam Newton is more Ben Roethlisberger than Michael Vick. And, like, he was even saying, like, he said, you know, get this racial stuff.
Yeah. Like, but more people are recognizing it.
Yeah.
Which I think is a positive thing. That's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I like to say, like I was telling you on the way over here, my boss went to the National Association of Black Journalism, like the convention. And he's a white Jewish guy from New Jersey, but he called me and was like, listen, this is an awesome event. It's really cool. And he goes, one thing that we want to do is definitely always add to diversity. And it made me proud to work for Bleacher Report. Like, just thinking, this is important to them. This is good.
Yeah.
And so I think we're getting to a point now, and who says it? Randolph Terrence.
Yeah.
The biggest just need to die. And we're at a point where we're seeing more turnover, and it's not perfect, but I'll tell you what, I didn't get to take a huge picture of my family, but my family looks like what probably I think the world's going to look like America's going to look like in a while, where it's me, and obviously when I said a blonde, my fiance's a black woman with blonde hair. She's a white person.
Yeah.
My brother married a Mexican girl.
Yeah. Well, that... I was at a show last night, and Neil Brennan, the co-creator of the Chappelle Show, he was doing a set, and he was basically saying, like, everybody, we have to fuck away
the racism.
So we're just like everybody's.
But
like,
it was being at my little brother's wedding, and it was my I got mixed cousins, I got black cousins, and everyone is just we're at this wedding where half of the wedding speaks only Spanish, and we speak worked. And guess what? Her family and the way they treat my little brother is as good as anybody else could treat. You know,
yeah,
could treat him. And the exposure they got to being around black people mm-hmm. is something that they even talk about. It stays with them.
Yeah.
It makes them feel more comfortable in different situations and be more understanding and opening. And for my family, the same thing.
Right.
They're around Mexicans and they're around Colombians and they're just like, yo, this is... We're all family. Like, when you have a black southern family, what do you like to drink a little bit, like to eat good food, hang out, dance?
And you want to do that too.
They want to do the exact same thing. And I think the more people realize things like that, God, it's so cheap. The world would be a better place.
I think you're right. And there you have it, everybody.
Well, I was going to ask you, Chris.
What were you going to ask me?
What's going on with the love life?
There's nothing. There's stand-up, dude.
You don't do the Tinder?
No, I'm afraid.
Why?
Dude, I'm afraid because if you're not on Facebook, so you don't see people posting screenshots of dudes trying to talk to them.
Oh, do they do that?
They do it on Facebook and Twitter. Dang. Just like, God, if I want to get to know you, I mean, it's, I don't know.
I'll tell you what, my little brother's best friend loves Tinder. We caught him in the middle of the rehearsal dinner.
When I was swiping right?
Swiping left and right.
Yeah.
In the middle of the rehearsal dinner. I said, JoJo, what are you doing? He goes, silently tried to put his phone in his pocket. We're like, were you on Tinder? And he was like, yo, check this girl out. So it's one of the things, man. Hey, it's for you. You do it the best way possible, man. For me, I just, I'm getting married soon, so
yeah,
I'm trying to deal with that.
Well, I want to keep
a different type of stress.
I want to keep grinding. Yeah. That's one that I want one day, but
yeah,
I got to keep grinding, man. Yeah. And maybe my princess will come too. I think we should go eat dinner.
Let's go get something to eat.
Mike, a pleasure, man.
Thank you so much, man. It was awesome.
Yeah,
this one will actually get released to the people, not like the Lost podcast.
Oh yeah, we did do a Lost one. You will never hear that. So, but this is it. All right, take it easy, everybody.
Oh.